decommissioning efforts because the platform, Haskell's Beach Piers Wells, and Elwood Onshore Oil and Gas Processing Facility were deserted as a result of the Venoco bankruptcy in 2017. Tonight's town hall will focus on the Platform Holly decommissioning effort. The State Lands Commission and agency partners are making important progress on plugging and abandoning the wells on Platform Holly, despite the challenges of the Venoco bankruptcy and the coronavirus pandemic. The Elwood Onshore Oil and Gas Processing Facility, often called the EOF, located in the city, is currently managed by the state and its contractor for the purpose of plugging and abandoning the wells on Platform Holly. The ultimate disposition of the EOF will be subject of future discussions. The 421 Piers Wells on Haskell's Beach, located partially in the city, had two wells that were plugged and abandoned in 2019, a significant accomplishment for the safety of our community and ocean environment. The next steps include removal of the 421 facilities. We will learn more about this effort at a future public meeting and when the draft environmental document is released for public review early next year. This town hall is particularly relevant to our community because you will see evidence of the transition away from fossil fuels. Indeed, old oil and gas platforms, piers, and wells are leaving our coastal waters for good. Our coastline along Elwood and Haskell's beaches will ultimately be free of oil infrastructure for the first time in nearly 100 years. And to think that at one time, this was, I believe, the third largest oil producing community in the country. Our community and the environment are safer because of these decommissioning efforts today. And for this, we can be proud. The presentation will be hosted by the State Lands Commission staff, Jennifer Lucchesi, Executive Officer, Seth Blackman, Chief Counsel, Peter Regan, Decommissioning Project Manager. Supporting agencies working together with the state, some of who are in attendance tonight, include the U.S. Coast Guard, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, Office of Spill Prevention and Response, the California Geologic Energy Management Division, Santa Barbara County, and UCSB, and of course, the City of Galena. I want to thank the State Lands Commission for hosting this town hall and all of you for being here this evening. And now I will turn the meeting over to Jennifer Lucchesi, Executive Officer for the State Lands Commission. Jennifer, please take it away.
Thank you. Good evening. And thank you again, Mayor Pro Tem Kiriakou, for your introduction and kind words. We are grateful for our partnerships with the City of Goleta, Santa Barbara County, the Santa Barbara County Air Pollution Control District, and our federal and state sister agencies, including OSPR, CalGEM, and the United States Coast Guard. I want to take a moment to acknowledge and honor the Chumash people on whose land the facilities we will be talking about this evening sit. We know that repairing our relationship with the land and the Chumash people requires action in addition to acknowledgement, and we intend to do just that. Native people have maintained a constant presence on the landscape for many thousands of years, and they are essential stewardship partners, whether along the coast, along our rivers and valleys, or in our fragile deserts. We thank the Chumash people for participating in this commission's activities and for their essential role in maintaining and adding to our state's rich cultural legacy. I also want to thank everyone, especially our stakeholders and members of the public, for taking the time to join our virtual town hall this evening. We are grateful that life is starting to get back to a new normal this holiday season, allowing us to spend time with our family, friends, and loved ones. But with that said, it is important to acknowledge that life isn't back to our traditional normal for many of us. We know that many of you are still feeling overwhelmed and stressed and exhausted. That's why we are so grateful for your participation tonight. Thank you for taking time this evening to hear updates on the Platform Holly decommissioning project. We know your time and energy is valuable and limited with lots of competing demands. We truly appreciate you being here with us tonight. You are currently viewing all of our panelists on what Zoom calls their gallery mode, like the game show Hollywood Squares. Using this view, I want to introduce our commission staff team. I'm Jennifer Lucchesi, the executive officer. I'm joined by Seth Blackman, our chief counsel, Jeff Plank, our project executive lead, Peter Reagan, our project manager, Jennifer Maddox, our tribal liaison, Eric Gillies, our assistant chief of our Division of Environmental Planning and Management, Sherry Pemberton, our chief of our External Affairs Division and legislative liaison, Joe Fable, our senior attorney, Phil Schlater from our Information Services Division, who's serving as a co-host, Katie Robinson Phillip, who's our environmental scientist and also co-host for tonight, and Renee DeLeon, our analyst and support for tonight's town hall. For the rest of the evening, we will be using the speaker view function of Zoom, so you'll only be able to see the person speaking as part of the presentation. Our agenda for the evening includes these opening remarks from me. Peter Reagan will then present updates on the Platform Holly plugging and abandonment work, and we will conclude with comments and questions from all of you tonight. I will quickly share some instructions on how we can best participate in this meeting so it runs as smoothly as possible. First, everyone, please make sure you have your microphones and phones muted to avoid background noise. If you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you will need to do so in one of three ways. If you are attending on the Zoom platform, you can raise your hand in Zoom. If you are new to Zoom and you joined our meeting using the Zoom application, click on the hand icon at the bottom of your screen. When you click on that hand, it will raise your hand. Second, if you are joining our meeting by phone, you must press *9 on your keypad to raise your hand to make a comment. We will call on individuals who have raised their hands in the order that they are raised using the name they registered with or the last three digits of their identifying phone number. After you are called on, you will be unmuted and promoted as a panelist so we can see you as you share your comments. Please also remember to unmute your computer or phone. In addition to raising your hand, you can also submit questions and comments using the Q&A feature in Zoom. To do so, please type your question in the Q&A box located at the bottom of your screen. Please keep your comments respectful and focused. We will mute anyone who fails to follow these guidelines or at worst dismiss them from tonight's event. We really do appreciate your support and patience as we work together on this virtual platform. I will now turn it over to our project manager, Peter Reagan.
Good afternoon, evening, I'm a bit behind today. So if you could start the presentation, Katie. Okay, so I have put together a fairly short project update as not a lot has changed since the previous update. But what has changed is quite significant in terms of progress. So the next slide, please. A quick recap on the recent history, which I'm sure a lot of you are very familiar with already. The assets were quit claimed by Venico in April 2017 and became the responsibility of the state due to the Venico bankruptcy and the Plains pipeline issue. ExxonMobil came on board in November and commenced operations to abandon the wells. We got 14 of the lower sections of some of the wells abandoned. And then, of course, everybody's well aware of March 2020, what happened there. Well, COVID hit, and due to the small working area on the platform, we had to shut down the operations as there's no room for social distancing, et cetera, on the platform. Therefore, we closed off, shut down the wells we were abandoning, and we had our contractor Beacon West on the platform still 24/7 to monitor the wells, maintain the facilities, and perform necessary maintenance, et cetera. So about 18 months later, in August, we got a crew back on board to start reactivating the abandonment rig. We had to basically redo everything that we had done previously to mothball the rig, but in reverse. So we're reconnecting everything, testing, and basically just undoing all the hardening efforts that we'd put in there to make sure the equipment was still going to be in good shape when we got back to the abandonments. So those guys were working 12 hours a day from August. And next slide, please. It took them approximately 2 months, to complete the rig reactivation again and get the rig back in action. So they were working 12 hours a day until the start of October. And then we got the full crew out there working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to finish off. That was all completed, tested, and the rig was ready to go on October the 5th when we moved on to the first well and started reabandonments again. So to date, as of today, we've completed 4 of the 30 wells that are out there. So that's now 4 that have been sealed all the way from the oil-bearing formations up to just below the seabed. Next slide. Ongoing activity. Obviously, we have Beacon West out there still to maintain the facilities 24/7. They monitor the wells which aren't being worked on by the abandonment rig, do all the required everyday maintenance to keep the facilities running, and monitoring security and generally keeping the place in good condition so as we can continue the abandonments. DCOR has taken over the actual rig abandonment work under ExxonMobil supervision. So ExxonMobil is continuing to oversee the abandonments, but DCOR is the ones that are out there actually working on the platform. We are continuing to use Goleta Pier to transfer the crew out to the platform. We run about 4 boat trips a day, 2 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon, to get the crew out there on a small crew boat. And we are still continuing to move cargo through Carpinteria and Port Hueneme on a much larger boat. Oh, next slide. We updated our emergency action plan last month, which required just a few updates as we've now started to get back into reabandonments. We wanted to go through it, check, make sure everything was up to date. So we've done that, and it's now out to the relevant authorities and agencies to approve. We tested our oil, gas, and utility pipelines that run from the EOF out to the platform in late September. Those all tested well with no issues at all. We also ran a pipeline ROV survey, which is a mini submarine camera that tracks along the pipeline. We tried to do that in September, but the sea conditions were a bit turbid, so we couldn't actually see very well. So we postponed that until November. We did that a few weeks ago, and we're currently waiting on the final reports. But the initial response was that there's no issues to be seen. We're also about to, next week, perform our regular scheduled spill drill in conjunction with OSPR. And said that'll be next week. And next slide. So looking to the future, current projections say we're expecting to be done and dusted with plugging the wells within 12 to 18 months. Now that is obviously quite a large span, but then you can never tell whether some wells go faster than we thought they would, some cause us more problems than we thought they were going to. So we've got a 6-month window in there, but we fully expect to be done by 18 months at the latest. While we get to the end of the abandonment process, we will start the CEQA analysis to analyze the platform's final disposition. And it says on here, late 22, early 23, but that is of course dependent on whether we manage to stick to the 12 to 18 month well abandonments. Hopefully that will all go to plan. And then we will then start to harden the platform, which is basically what we did prior to the COVID shutdown, but for the entire platform rather than just the drilling rig. So we'll shut down all the unnecessary systems that are on there that are to deal with oil and gas, because the wells will be sealed. We'll be leaving security, navigation lights, things like that, but all the hydrocarbons will be flushed off the platform and it will pretty much just be left inert. And after that's complete, I said, we'll be doing the CEQA analysis, and we're intending to hopefully start the pre-CEQA public outreach around mid-2022. So next slide. The EOF, basically nothing's planned for the EOF. Nothing has changed at the EOF. It's currently 50% of the whole facility is already taken out of service. We only use a very small portion of the facility at the minute. Once all the wells are plugged, we won't need that. And daily operations at the EOF will be discontinued. We will secure the facility. Next slide, please. Which takes us on to a very brief update on the 421 Haskell's Beach piers and the wells there. Next slide. So as same as the platform, the 421 lease and the two wells, the caissons, piers, et cetera, were a quick claim to the state by Venico in 2017. We had those abandoned to state regulations in 2019. The wells are currently sitting out there abandoned, and the project team is working on the CEQA documentation so we can get in there along with ExxonMobil and remove the piers and caisson structures. So the draft EIR is currently under review, and we're expected to have that released before the end of this year, maybe early next year. And the next slide. And that is it. So I will hand you back off to Jennifer to facilitate any questions.
Thank you, Peter. So before we begin public comment, I just want to remind everyone on the logistics for participating. I want to stress that the subjects tonight for those who have questions or comments are the Platform Holly plug and abandonment effort, the Piers 421 removal project, and the status of the EOF. I know the ultimate disposition, including the concepts for reuse of the platform, is important to all of you. However, we are at least 6 months, if not longer, from even beginning to start the public outreach and engagement on the final disposition of the platform. We will definitely have a town hall event dedicated to the final disposition of the platform as an initial engagement event prior to starting the CEQA process. So I really encourage you, those who have comments and ideas to share on that subject, to submit those in writing by email or U.S. Postal Service, as opposed to commenting verbally this evening. This way, we can ensure your comments are part of our files and we can incorporate and reference that input at the appropriate time. So in conclusion, and as we lead into the public comment, I want to thank the city again for being such gracious co-hosts and partners. And we will open it up to comments and questions. As Katie is bringing in the first commenter, I will be looking at the Q&A in the Zoom chat. So there are a number of questions coming up. I'll start with the first one, and then we'll move to the public commenters. So the first question that we see is, what was the initial estimate for cost to the taxpayers of abandonment, and what is it now? That is a great question. So our initial estimates when Venico deserted the facilities and we were looking to take over and protect public health and safety, we estimated the cost to taxpayers out of the general fund to be about $58 million. Plus, we had a $22 million bond from Venico. The legislature since then has appropriated a total of a little over $110 million to the commission to complete phase one of which is the plugging and abandonment work. This does not include monies for the platform decommissioning. So in total, we anticipate that the state share to come in under about $132.5 million. ExxonMobil, as the prior operator, has the legal responsibility under certain contracts with the state to fund the majority of the well abandonment and platform decommissioning work. Exxon anticipates spending over $350 million to complete this work. At this time, I just want to turn it over to Seth Blackman, our chief counsel, to see if there's anything he would like to add to that.
Jennifer, no, I think that's accurate. I think what we've seen is that some of the costs, based on what the legislature reappropriated for the commission, was reflective of sort of the time, the additional time needed because of the pandemic. And I think there's probably some modifications for what Exxon's final kind of out of the or end cost will be. But yes, I think that that's what we've seen now is an accurate update on what the state's costs are, and that Exxon really, I think at this point, is probably going to see something very much in that $350 million range. So I think that's accurate.
Great. Thanks, Seth. All right, Katie, can you call on our first public commenter?
Yes, thank you. Our first public speaker is Ryan Davis. Ryan, you should be able to unmute yourself. Here we go.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Hi. Thanks for hosting the meeting tonight. So I had a couple of questions. Maybe I can just do one and then come back in if there's more time. So what is the voltage assessment of the sea to shore cable that runs from Holly to, I think there's two sites that are on like just north of the Coal Oil Point Preserve area. So just wondering if we had any info on that.
That's a great question. Peter, do you have the answer to that? If not, we can certainly get back to you, Ryan.
Off the top of my head, no, sorry. That's something I'd need to go and look up.
We will certainly try to get back to you. If possible, it would be great if you could follow up with us by email, Ryan, with that question, so we have your contact information.
All right. Could I ask another one since...
Yes.
So from what I understand, the contract states that the platform has to be put back to its original state. And my question is, if it's going to be removed or any of the other options that are going to be out there, what are going to be done about the 30 well lines that go, kind of thousands of feet down into the earth? Is there anything that's going to be done about that? And I mean, how are we able to fulfill that requirement if it gets removed is my question.
Yeah, so generally speaking, all of the state lands leases that we issue, whether it's for offshore oil and gas platforms or piers, have the standard provision that require the lessee to return the lands to their natural state at the discretion of the State Lands Commission. So the ultimate disposition of the platform will be made by the commission after a feasibility study that looks at all the options for the platform, as well as the CEQA analysis that will likely involve an EIR. As it relates to the ultimate disposition of the wells when they're plugged and abandoned subsurface of the ocean floor, I'll turn it over to Peter to describe what that looks like.
Sorry, Jennifer, I was just looking up the platform voltage is 16 kilovolts.
Oh, great.
It's on the cable. So I'm sorry, what was your request? I'm a little distracted there.
That's okay, Peter. Ryan was asking, after the wells are completely plugged and abandoned, which maybe you can describe what they're plugged with, the cement and other things, subsurface of the ocean floor, they are left there, right?
Yes, the regulations state that the wells need to have a surface plug between 50 and 100 feet below the seafloor. So basically, we have the surface plugs in there at least 100 feet long from anywhere from 50 to 150 something feet below the seafloor is what's left on the kind of seabed at the minute inside the conductors, obviously.
And that's iron? Those lines are made out of iron or...
Sorry, the conductors that are still there from the seafloor to the platform, yes, are steel, but inside of it, it's all sealed with cement.
Okay. And then I was asking that question about the cable. Has that cable been tested recently? Do we know if it's functional?
Yes, because we use it still. Okay.
All right. Great. Thanks.
Thank you, Ryan. Katie, can you call the next speaker?
Yes, thank you. Our next speaker is Carla Frisk.
Hi, Carla. Carla, you may
I did. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
I've done it this way before, so I thought, what if I can't get there? How are you guys? I hope you're doing well, and nice to see you all, not in person. I just wanted to ask a couple things. One is to just confirm on the wells that were removed before the 14, and then of the 30 that are left, that's cumulative, right? Like it says 44 wells total. Is that right?
Actually, there's 30 wells on the platform.
Total. So of the 30 wells, 14 are done plus the four. Is that right?
Well, the 14 were partially plugged prior to the pandemic hitting. So since then, we have fully completed the plug and abandonment of 4 out of the 30 wells.
Okay. So 4 are done. And then of the 14, then there's 10 half done or whatever.
Right.
Okay. All right. Good. Thanks for clarifying that. And then my other question is related to the environmental review on the platform. Mm-hmm. And I guess we were just for affiliation and with Get Oil Out. So we, I guess, were under the impression that the environmental review would start sooner. The actual CEQA document would begin earlier in 2022, so that by the time the wells were completed, we would be pretty far down the road in getting that environmental document completed, so that obviously that whatever is going to happen can start happening sooner rather than later. So I'm just wondering if there's any opportunity to start that, to pull that process up sooner, so that we're having as little, you know, as much overlap as possible and as little downtime as possible, especially with what we went through with, the stoppage of the P&A because of COVID. And obviously those of us that are down here have been working on this for a long time, are anxious to see, you know, real progress in terms of actual things going away. So anyway, that's a big question, but I thought maybe you could just go over that, or someone could in a little detail as to when we might actually, I just assumed that the EIR would take a year. So maybe that's a bad assumption. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think that's what we always shoot for, is to complete the EIR within a year. I think that just in reality, it might take a little longer because we will be also conducting a feasibility study, looking at the different options to help inform the CEQA analysis. I think we are right there with you, Carla, and many others in your community and your colleagues, that we want to start the CEQA process as soon as possible. Frankly, it comes down to resources, and it's human resources, staffing resources. We have an incredible environmental planning and management division led by Eric and his chief, Nicole, but we're relatively small in that division. And so between other applications and projects that we are currently conducting the CEQA analysis for, including 421. And given the length of time that we anticipate it'll take to complete the plugging and abandonment, we are shooting for beginning the CEQA process in the middle of next year. That's the best we can estimate given our existing resources, staffing resources. If we can get it started earlier, we will certainly do that. We were appropriated the funding to begin the feasibility and CEQA analysis in this last state budget. So we do have the funding available. It really just comes down to human resources. So we will do our very best to start earlier, but middle of next year is our best guess.
So if you actually start that process in the middle of 2022, so maybe I got my notes wrong, What does that actually mean? Is that when a notice of preparation go out at that time and scoping would be shortly thereafter, or would we have a bunch of stuff before the NOP goes out?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're frankly still building that timeline out. So if we look at the Rincon Island decommissioning project as a proxy, what we've started there is a feasibility study to look at the different options in terms of the ultimate disposition of the onshore facility and the island. That will then feed into and be the foundation for the CEQA analysis. That will help refine our proposed project description as well as the alternatives. Like I said, we're still building out the timing for the platform decommissioning. And so it could be where we start the feasibility study in the second quarter of next year and then lead into the NOP. But I hate to commit our team to anything at this point because, like I said, we're still building that out. We will be as transparent as possible once we kind of finalize the details on that and update the community as quickly as possible. We know it's a significant element to this whole project. So,
Jennifer, can I add one thing from Rincon? Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Carla.
Well, I was just going to ask, just to clarify, the feasibility study would be done before the NOP is released, and how long would you expect that to take? So go ahead.
Yeah, the feasibility study at Rincon has taken about 2 to 3 months.
And Carla, what I was going to add to that is that the feasibility study still had a lot of interaction with local stakeholders, that we've done for Rincon. And I would imagine the exact same process would be done for Holly. So a lot of the same stakeholder involvement and outreach and, a lot of it's almost like a prepackaging certain aspects of CEQA because this is a state run project. So I think there's a lot that would allow for additional, stakeholder input and interaction that wouldn't necessarily be there on other types of projects. So it's a little different ordering because a lot of times, with EIRs, with a developer, they come in with a plan they've already kind of planned or created. And then we're all going through the process of public review after the fact. In this case, we're actually talking about doing public comment and public interaction to help craft the feasibility study and the project and then moving it forward through the final CEQA process. So I think there's a little bit more connection and investment for the local community and those who have kind of these vested interests. So I'm hopeful that will continue engagement in a way that's a little different than under traditional CEQA, but I think it actually allows for more.
Okay, I think that's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Carla. So I see, Ryan, you have your hand up again. I'm going to go through a couple of the questions that have populated the Q&A segment of section of Zoom. So, and then we'll come back to you, Ryan. We received a question about, are we also holding off our comments on the disposition of the 421 piers and the various potential options? We are about to release the EIR, the draft EIR for the decommissioning of the piers and related infrastructure. The proposed project is the removal of those piers and the related infrastructure that's on state property. In terms of the various alternatives that will be analyzed in the EIR, I encourage you to be on the lookout for that draft, review those alternatives, include and the proposed project, and comment as appropriate. You don't need to hold off your comments. So if you want to type those into the question and answer or raise your hand, we're happy to hear them. But I'd like to stress that we are in the CEQA process for that removal project. And so it's important that your voice is heard and your comments are received. So I really encourage you to both comment on the document itself when it gets released, as well as participate in any of the hearings that we'll have on that. The next question is related to the EOF, and actually the next couple of questions are related to the EOF, and I'll state the questions and then turn it over to Seth to answer. We are in active litigation over the EOF, so we need to just be thoughtful about how we respond to those questions. So the first question is, will the equipment at the EOF be removed? And the second question is, will the EOF undergo CEQA review as part of the Holly decommissioning? Seth?
Thanks, Jennifer. So we really can't speak to this at this point in time. A lot of this really depends on the fact that the State Lands Commission doesn't have an ownership interest in the Elwood Onshore facility. That ownership interest still lies with the trustee in the bankruptcy, which is Eugene Davis. As Jennifer noted, we're in the middle of ongoing litigation around this issue. So the commission at this point in time can't speak to removal, decommissioning, or anything else as it relates to the Elwood Onshore facility infrastructure or the property itself, because we don't have an ownership interest in that property. And we're only manning it at this point in time and managing it because of the health and safety concerns and the abatement of those health and safety issues associated with abandoning Platform Holly. So unfortunately, we can't give you better answers on what's happening with the EOF at this point in time. At some point, we will have the resolution of the existing litigation, and there may be more to tell later next year.
Thank you, Seth. So the last question in the question and answer chat is, when do you hope to have firmer dates with respect to completion? So I'm making an assumption that you are referring to the plugging and abandonment of the 30 wells on Platform Holly. And our best guess is that it'll take us between 12 and 18 months to complete that plugging and abandonment work. If we've learned anything from the last couple of years with the pandemic, is that anything can happen. And so we really can't give firmer dates than that. Similar to getting started on the EIR for the ultimate decommissioning and making decisions on that, we are very motivated to get this done. And we are working very hard with Exxon and their contractors to plug and abandon those wells. But 12 to 18 months is our best guess at this time.
And I would suggest to tune into future town hall meetings as we continue to get more and more data, obviously, we'll be able to continue to refine things. But we've looked at this very, very hard, as Jennifer noted, and the best estimate we have right now is what it is. But like I said, in another 6 months or 9 months, I think those numbers will continue and the data will continue to refine.
All right, Katie, can you call our next speaker?
Yes, thank you. Our next speaker is Ryan Robbins.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi, I'm back. So I guess I'll just get right to it. So there is a shore tank site that's, I think it's in Coal Oil Point Preserve. It's just, you know, just beyond the point. And I think it's on UC property. Is that correct? Do you know?
Seth?
Are you talking about the old Elwood Marine Terminal that's on the West Campus at UCSB?
That's correct.
Yeah, that is on the campus and under the ownership. The land is on the ownership of the University of California, Santa Barbara. They have jurisdiction over that portion of the, like you said, kind of like a tank farm. There's some batteries that are still there that were related to the old Elwood Marine Terminal.
Mm-hmm. Is that where the shore cable runs to that location, or does it run to the other one further down?
Yeah, I do not know.
Ask Peter.
Peter,
or
yeah.
Jeff. Peter, do you know?
That runs to the EOF from the platform.
And that's the one that's a little further up past Sandpiper Golf Course?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So the after the plugging is completed, is there any expectation that any sort of seepage will be decreased, which I guess would imply that some of the lines were already just decayed, and when they get cemented, that will mitigate any of the seepage? Is that expected, or is it just kind of expected that that's part of the area?
When you say the lines, you're referring to the actual wells?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, there's nothing seeping out of any of the wells. That seepage that you're seeing there is all natural seepage.
All right. Okay. Do we know what the actual like assessed decommissioning funds are at this point? I heard a number thrown out a little while ago of like $350 million. Is that what the cost was going to be for plugging, or was that the entire decommissioning fund?
Seth, do you want to?
Yeah. So the initial estimates for the plug and abandonment and the full decommissioning subject to a proof of claim that the commission submitted in bankruptcy was about $350 million. That's actually the overall number all in by the time the state's share is done and ExxonMobil's share is done is probably going to be higher than that. But the, like I said, the all-in cost is going to certainly exceed the original estimates because time and value of money. We had to extend time out. We had to continue maintenance and operations on the platform during the COVID delay. So yeah, final numbers will be higher, but those were the numbers that were used as part of a larger bankruptcy proof of claim and settlement based on a significant amount of data and input.
Okay. Lastly, I was just curious. By the way, Seth, I really love that background. That's a great background.
Hollister.
Yeah. Looks like some good waves over there. So would it be possible for us to coordinate a meeting with the governor to just discuss some upcoming like projects? I'm asking because I've actually reached out to the governor with regards to what our future interests are and you know the benefits with regards to what our future interests will are. So I just didn't know if it was possible if we could you know ask the governor to sit down as well possibly the Goleta you know city hall staff as well.
Yeah, I would recommend that you continue working your communication avenues. Our bosses, the state lands commissioners, are the lieutenant governor, the state controller, and the director of finance. So our chain of command isn't actually through the administration. So I, unfortunately, and our team can't help you in those communications with the governor. So I would encourage you to just continue along the communication pathway that you're already exploring.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Katie, can you call our next speaker?
Yes, thank you. Our next speaker is Linda Kropp.
Hi, Linda.
There she is.
Hi, Linda.
I'm a little bit further west than Seth. I waved at you as I drove by. So Linda Kropp, Environmental Defense Center, and I don't have any questions. I just wanted to once again thank the California State Lands Commission staff for holding these town hall meetings. They're a great opportunity to keep the public informed. And I love the informal nature where people can ask questions and get answers on the spot. And just want to really compliment this agency for its transparency and public outreach. You go way above and beyond. And I really hope other agencies will someday duplicate what you do because it's really refreshing. You know, the public really feels like you care about what we think and you provide information readily and you're very knowledgeable. And it's just fantastic. And so look forward to the formal processes coming along through CEQA, but I just wanted to say thank you.
Thank you, Linda, for those kind words. We really appreciate the collaborative nature with you and your colleagues and the rest of the community too. This is a huge transitionary time for the Santa Barbara Channel, and we're happy to be partners with all of you in that. Katie, do we have any additional speakers?
Thank you. At this time, we have no other hands raised for questions or comments. Our next speaker is Stuart Kasdan. And it'll just take a moment for you to be promoted to a panelist, and then you'll be able to use audio or video.
Hi, Stuart.
Hi, since there were other speakers, I just also wanted to echo what Linda said and that you guys have been great to work with. And it's a breath of fresh air in a way for the community to have people that they can trust who are reaching out. And you've been great to work with. And it's just, I appreciate it. So thank you.
Thank you so much. It's nice to see you.
Nice to see you. Okay.
Thank you. Katie, it looks like we have another speaker, or actually Ryan with another question or comment.
Do I?
Yes, he should be asking us now.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. So we were talking earlier about the CEQA process, and I was really curious if there was a group, or, you know, if you contract out CEQA work, and if you if it was done regularly through, you know, a local organization here, and if so, who they were. So that if we, yeah, if we were trying to work on the CEQA process and kind of get ahead and get some of the work done, you know, who could we reach out to for an example or to learn more?
Yeah, certainly. So particularly with EIRs, we do contract out with consultants to help us develop those EIRs. And the process usually is we will go to our commission. Our commission meets every 2 months. It's a public meeting, very much very similar to city council or county board of supervisor meetings. We have an agenda, and we will go to our commission to request authority to enter into a contract for CEQA analysis purposes. We have not done so yet for Platform Holly, the Platform Holly decommissioning EIR. We have obviously done that for the Piers Ford 21 because we're about to release the draft EIR. And I will have to turn it over to Eric Gillies, our assistant chief of our Environmental Planning and Management Division, to identify who our consultant is for the Piers Ford 21 project.
Yeah, we have Padre on contract for the EIR. For Holly, we're going to have to go out to bid separately and get an independent, you know, go out to a competitive bid. And so I would imagine there's quite a few consultants that's going to, you know, go for this project. And then on RINCON, we also have Padre doing the feasibility study as well as carrying forward to the CEQA document.
Thank you, Eric.
Padre is the name of the organization or company that, that does the environmental assessment?
Yes, it's a local company. They're based out of Santa Barbara, I believe.
All right. Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And I would really recommend following the Rincon Island decommissioning project trajectory, because it's going to be a really good proxy for how we're approaching Platform Holly in terms of process and steps. Because we're using the same consultant for both Piers 421 and the Rincon Island project, that'll give you a good sense on kind of the how Padre Associates in partnership with us approach these types of projects in our analysis and deliberation.
When Holly was originally, you know, placed out there, was there a CEQA process that that it went through in order to, you know, get permission to put it out there, or was that not in place during those days?
I believe Platform Holly was constructed prior to CEQA being implemented.
Okay. And Ryan, just if you're curious, by almost 20 years, but after the 1969 oil spill, the commission actually put a moratorium on all of its active producing platforms. And roughly around the time that CEQA was kind of passed and the law came into place, to do a restart, the commission actually did CEQA documents on a variety of the platforms that were out there. It was sort of a first run through. So there are some CEQA documents that really look at what it was to restart the production and everything else out of an abundance of caution, because the commission and everybody else learned so many lessons from the 1969 oil spill. So there was a lot that kind of went into that. That said, Jennifer's absolutely right. The original build out happened in the 50s, well before CEQA was actually a law.
Would it be possible for us to get a copy of any of those CEQA processes or CEQA, you know, that paperwork, just to
there? Yeah, there probably are. I would check with, I can check with our team and others, but I think that we absolutely, either we have it or we can put you in the right place that you can find it.
Okay. Should I follow up with you about that?
You can. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Seth.
Yep.
Great. So it looks, I'm sorry, Ryan, I don't mean to cut you off. Are you finished? Great. Thank you. So it looks like we have a couple of additional questions in the chat. The next one is, given this Holly process, how will this relate to the disposition of the many other non-productive wells in the Santa Barbara vicinity? So that's a comprehensive question. I'm going to try to take it in pieces. From the State Lands Commission's jurisdiction, we actually only have two other offshore leases that are actively producing in the Santa Barbara Channel. Those are what we call the West Montalvo leases. Those are within Ventura County, and they are actually wells that are drilled onshore and then are directionally drilled offshore. Those are still producing at this time. But we are learning a lot, frankly, in terms of the cost and the process for plugging and abandoning wells. And we'll certainly use lessons learned at Platform Holly, Rincon Island, and through our legacy well program at Summerlin Beach to inform how we approach the plugging and abandonment of those leases once they cease to produce. The offshore in federal waters, BOEM just released their version of an NOP and to assess the decommissioning of 8 platforms in the Santa Barbara Channel and federal waters. So if you haven't already tapped into the BOEM website to follow that process, I highly recommend you do that. And then for wells that are completely contained onshore in Santa Barbara County, that is out of our jurisdiction and out of our expertise, frankly. So I would recommend that you direct those questions to the Santa Barbara County and even CalGEM, the state oil and gas regulator. The next question is, how many public participants are there here tonight? And it looks like Katie is telling me that we are fluctuating between 57 and 70 or so. But it's hard for us to tell how many of those are private individuals versus representatives of agencies or other organizations, but that's how many attendees are participating tonight, between 57 and 70. We're grateful for that level of participation for sure. The next question that's coming in is, will the platforms in federal waters be totally removed or left as reefs? That's a great question. And process that BOEM is embarking on under NEPA and their own regulations will certainly look at all of those different options. I don't know if they've come to any kind of conclusion yet. I highly doubt they have, because they're just embarking on this public NEPA process. So like I said, it's important if the ultimate disposition of those platforms in federal waters are important to you, please engage in that federal process. So, Katie, do we have any public speakers that still wish to speak?
There are no hands raised right now. So if you would like to ask a question or provide a comment, please raise your hand. And then currently we have no questions in the Q&A box.
Great. Well, I will start sharing some conclusionary remarks. But if you do end up having a question or want to speak, please don't let me stop you from doing that. But also be assured that if you have any questions or comments that come to you, later this evening or over the next couple of weeks or in a month or two, we are always available. And you can contact us through our website, by email, by phone, and we will endeavor to get back to you as quickly as we can. So like I said, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. So in conclusion, I want to again thank the city for being such great partners, including Mayor Perotti, Mayor Pro Tem Kiriakou, and Ann Wells, and other city staff. Like I mentioned a couple times, please be on the lookout for the draft EIR for the Piers 421 project. We hope to publish it late this year, or early next year. It will provide critical information on how you can provide comments and input on the proposed project and the alternatives analysis. We anticipate a lot of progress on this entire project, both Piers 421 and Platform Holly in 2022, especially compared to the last year and 2020. So please stay engaged with us and our team. Like I said, we are always available to answer questions or listen to any concerns that you have. So with that, oh, it looks like we have a couple more hands up. Great. Katie.
Yes, thank you. Our next speaker is Carla Frisk. And a few hands disappeared. So if you still wanted to speak, please raise your hand again so that I can promote you to panelists to speak.
I think I got it. Yeah.
Now we can see you.
Yeah. Now you can see me. No, I don't know why I didn't figure out that before. I was so worried about getting the audio part right. But anyway, so I didn't think about asking questions on lease 421, but since you just went over it. So if, depending on when that draft EIR comes out, do you have a timeline and as to how long that comment period would be and when we might be looking for, we're of course hoping that we could have an in-person hearing, but if not, when we might have a public hearing on that? A staff hearing. I know it won't go to the commission till later.
Yeah, of course. Eric, can you provide the time frame for public comment and hearings and then ultimate commission consideration?
Yeah, we're looking actually probably after the holidays to release a document, because the releasing it before is just, we don't have much time to review.
We don't want you to do that before the holidays.
Yeah, and so we're looking at January and doing a 45-day public review, and then we'll have a public meeting. Hasn't been decided if we'll go down in person. We'll have to see how the pandemic is, but it could be Zoom. We have an EIR out right now where we did a Zoom meeting and it worked out well. Actually, we did the NOP last summer via Zoom, and then we're looking at taking to the commission in April. So there's a late April date. And then we're working with ExxonMobil. We're trying to work with them to get, their bids packaged together so they could possibly start August, September timeframe. But if that doesn't happen, it could carry over to 2023 for the actual decommissioning.
So would the public hearing be during the 45-day public review period, or at the end, or do you have even now as to when that might be? That seems
It would probably be in February. If we release it in January, it'll most likely be in February during the 45-day.
Okay.
And we typically do it in the middle to later to have people get a chance to review it.
Right.
And then we do two meetings, one in the afternoon, of course, and then one in the evening.
All right. Okay.
So then you would read down there.
Yeah, final EIR would come out just right before the April meeting with the staff recommendation and everything. Is that how that you would envision that?
Yeah, typically we like to release the final. We're required 15 days before the commission meeting, but typically we like to try to get it out a month in advance of the commission meeting. We're hoping there won't be a lot of comments and controversy, because I think everybody wants to get these things out.
Yeah.
And so I think the final should go fairly quickly. And like I mentioned, we have Padre Associates as our consultant.
Yeah.
And the delay right now is we ended up doing some testing of the road, and we're still waiting for the results of that. And we're still under doing some travel consultation.
Okay, thank you for that detail. That's very helpful to figure out what we as groups and organizations are going to have coming down the pike.
Of course. Thank you, Carla. Anything else?
Not from me, I don't think.
You know where to find us.
We do.
All right. Well, thank you again, everyone, for your time and energy and attention. And we look forward to our next town hall. And also, and hopefully, fingers crossed, we can come down and see you all in person. Please stay healthy and safe. And we will talk soon. Thank you.